We're continuing chapter 15 of Emma. The carriage came, and Mr. Woodhouse, always the first object on such occasions, was carefully attended to his own by Mr. Knightley and Mr. Weston. But not all that either could say could prevent some renewal of alarm at the sight of the snow, which had actually fallen, and the discovery of a much darker night than he had been prepared for. He was afraid they should not have had a very bad drive. He was afraid poor Isabel would not like it. And there was a poor Emma in the carriage behind. He did not know what they could best do. They must keep together as much as they could. And James was talked to and given charge to go very slow and wait for the other carriage. Isabella stepped in after her father. John Knightley, forgetting that he did not belong to their party, stepped in after his wife very naturally, so that Emma found, on being escorted and followed into the second carriage by Mr. Elton, that the door was to be lawfully shut on them, and that they were to have a tête-à-tête drive. It would not have been the awkwardness of a moment. It would have been rather a pleasure previous to the suspicions of this very day. She could have talked to him of Harriet, and 3/4 of a mile would have seemed but one. But now, she would rather have that had not happened. She believed he had been drinking too much of Mr. Weston's good wine, and felt sure he would want to be talking nonsense. To restrain him as much as might be by her own manners, she was immediately preparing to speak with exquisite calmness and gravity of the weather and the night. But scarcely had she begun, scarcely had they passed the sweep gate and joined the other carriage, than she found her subject cut up, her hand seized, her attention demanded, and Mr. Elton actually making violent love to her, availing himself of the precious opportunity, declaring sentiments which must already be well known, hoping, fearing, adoring, ready to die if she refused him, but flattering himself that his ardent attachment and unequalled love and unexampled passion could not fail of having some effect, and in short very much resolved on being seriously accepted as soon as possible. It really was so. Without scruple, without apology, without much apparent diffidence, Mr. Elton, lover of Harriet, was professing himself her lover. She tried to stop him, but vainly. He would go on and say it all. Angry as she was, the thought of the moment made her resolve to restrain herself when she did speak. She felt that half this folly must be drunkenness, and therefore could only hope that it might belong only to the passing hour. Accordingly, with a mixture of the serious and the playful, which she hoped would best suit his half and half state, she replied, "I am very much astonished, Mr. Elton. This to me? You forget yourself. You take me for my friend. Any message to Miss Smith I shall be happy to deliver, but no more of this to me, if you please." "Miss Smith, message to Miss Smith, what possibly could she mean?" And he repeated her words with such assurance of accent, such boastful pretense of amazement, that she could not help but replying with quickness, "Mr. Elton, this is the most extraordinary conduct, and I can account for it only in one way. You are not yourself, or you could not speak either to me or of Harriet in such a manner. Command yourself enough to say no more, and I will endeavor to forget it." But Mr. Elton had only drunk wine enough to elevate his spirits, and not at all to confuse his intellects. He perfectly knew his own meaning, and having warmly protested against her suspicion as most injurious, and slightly touched upon his respect for Miss Smith as her friend, but acknowledging his wonder that Miss Smith should be mentioned at all, he resumed the subject of his own passion, and was very urgent for a favorable answer. As she thought less of his inebriety, she thought more of his inconstancy and presumption, and with fewer struggles for politeness replied, "It is impossible for me to doubt any longer. You have made yourself too clear. Mr. Elton, my astonishment is much beyond anything I can express. After such behavior I have witnessed during the last month to Miss Smith, such attentions as I have been in the daily habit of observing, to be addressing me in this manner, this is an unsteadiness of character, indeed, which I had not supposed possible. Believe me, sir, I am far, very far from gratified in being the object of such professions." "Good heavens," cried Mr. Elton, "what can be the meaning of this? Miss Smith? I never thought of Miss Smith in the whole course of my existence, never paid her any attentions but as your friend, never cared whether she were dead or alive but as your friend. If she had fancied otherwise, her own wishes had misled her, and I am very sorry, extremely sorry. But Miss Smith, indeed, oh, Miss Woodhouse, who can think of Miss Smith when Miss Woodhouse is near? No, upon my honor, there is no unsteadiness of character. I have thought only of you. I protest against having paid the smallest attention to anyone else. Everything I have said or done for many weeks past has been with the sole view of marking my adoration of yourself. You cannot really seriously doubt it. No, and in an accent meant to be insinuating, I am sure you have seen and understood me. It would be impossible to say what Emma felt on hearing this, which of all her unpleasant sensations was uppermost. She was too completely overpowered to be immediately able to reply, and 2 moments of silence being ample encouragement for Mr. Elton's sanguine state of mind, he tried to take her hand again as he joyously exclaimed, "Charming Miss Woodhouse, allow me to interpret this interesting silence. It confesses that you have long understood me." "No, sir," cried Emma, "it confesses no such thing. So far from having long understood you, I have been in most complete error with respect to your views. Till this moment, as to myself, I am very sorry that you should have been giving way to any feeling. Nothing could be farther from my wishes. Your attachment to my friend Harriet, your pursuit of her, pursuit it appeared, gave me great pleasure, and I have been very earnestly wishing you success. But had I supposed that she were not your attraction to Hartfield, I should certainly have thought you judged ill in making your visits so frequent. Am I to believe that you never sought to recommend yourself particularly to Miss Smith? That you never thought seriously of her?" "Never, madam," cried he, affronted in his turn. "Never, I assure you. I think seriously of Miss Smith. Miss Smith is a very good sort of girl, and I should be happy to see her respectably settled. I wish her extremely well, and no doubt there are men who might not object. Everybody has their level, but as for myself, I am not, I think, quite so much as at a loss. I need not so totally despair of an equal alliance to be addressing myself to Miss Smith. No, madam, my visits to Hartfield have been for yourself only, and the encouragement I received." "Encouragement? I give you encouragement? Sir, you have been entirely mistaken in supposing it. I have seen you only as the admirer of my friend. In no other light could you have been more to me than a common acquaintance. I am exceedingly sorry, but it is well that the mistake ends where it does. Had the same behavior continued, Miss Smith might have been led into a misconception of your views, not being aware, probably any more than myself, of the very great inequity which you are so sensible of. But as it is, the disappointment is single, and I trust will not be lasting. I have no thought of matrimony at present." He was too angry to say another word, her manner too decided to invite supplication, and in this state of swelling resentment and mutually deep mortification, they had to continue together for a few minutes longer, for the fears of Mr. Woodhouse had confined them to a foot pace. If there had not been so much anger, there would have been desperate awkwardness, but their straightforward emotions left no room for the little zigzags of embarrassment. Without knowing when the carriage turned into Vicarage Lane, or when it stopped, they found themselves all at once at the door of his house, and he was out before another syllable passed. Emma then felt it indispensable to wish him a good night. The compliment was just returned, coldly and proudly, and, under indescribable irritation of spirits, she was then conveyed to Hartfield. There she was welcomed with the utmost delight by her father, who had been trembling from the dangers of a solitary drive from Vicarage Lane, turning a corner which he could not never bear to think of, and in strange hands, a mere common coachman, no James, and there seemed as if her return only were wanted to make everything go well, for Mr. John Knightley, ashamed of his ill humor, was now all kindness and attention, and so particularly solicitous for the comfort of her father as to seem, if not quite ready to join him at the basin of gruel, perfectly sensible in its being exceedingly wholesome, and the day was concluding in peace and comfort to all of their little party except herself. But her mind had never been in such perturbation, and it needed a very strong effort to appear attentive and cheerful till the usual hour of separating allowed her the relief of quiet reflection. That's the end of chapter 15.